This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon, and thanks for being with us. Earlier today, President Biden spoke with Vladimir Putin on the phone for about an hour. We'll hear more about that call later in the program. The president had asked to speak with Putin after U.S. intelligence officials determined Russia might invade Ukraine within days. On Friday, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the U.S. did not know if Putin intends to invade, but that U.S. civilians in Ukraine ought to leave now.
If a Russian attack on Ukraine proceeds, it is likely to begin with aerial bombing and missile attacks that could obviously kill civilians without regard to their nationality. A subsequent ground invasion would involve the onslaught of a massive force.
The U.S. State Department has ordered most employees to leave the embassy in the Ukrainian capital and says it will suspend consular services there. Beginning on Sunday, NPR's Steve Inskeep has been gaining some insight from a senior U.S. military official. Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Scott. Glad to be here.
Why is the U.S. intensifying its warnings now, from what you've been able to glean?
Well, not because they definitely know what Russia is going to do. This senior military official wasn't authorized to speak publicly, so we're not using their name. But the official added insight and said, quote, "We do not have evidence that Putin has made a decision." Nevertheless, something was detected in recent days that has sharply heightened concern.
Do we know what it is?
The official was not specific, but described this as less of a smoking gun, like one great piece of intelligence, and more as the result of information that's accumulated for months. More and more Russian troops are positioned near Ukraine. I should add a qualifier here. We know from publicly available satellite photos that troops are not right on the border, but they are in staging areas some distance away, officially performing military exercises.
Let's also add the Russians haven't offered any kind of political justification or pretext that would justify an invasion.
No, they haven't. When their troops went into some other countries in recent years, they had some excuse, some kind of violence or unrest, or even an invitation from somebody in the country to come in. We haven't seen that with Ukraine. The U.S. has warned of false flag operations that would create that pretext, but that hasn't happened yet either. Nevertheless, the Russians have piled up tremendous force.
Jake Sullivan talked about aerial bombings and missile attacks. What would an invasion look like?
Well, I felt that Sullivan's words were particularly meaningful because Russia is one of the few nations in the world that could conduct the kind of invasion that, Scott, we associate with the United States. When the U.S. invaded Iraq, and I know you covered that, they ordered sudden airstrikes. They fired missiles. They dominated the skies. They had armored units who could race to the capital. They very quickly decapitated the government. It was very violent. It was very fast. And Russia has many of those same capabilities. Russia also has precision weapons. Their planes would dominate the skies. It's widely reported they've deployed large numbers of rocket launchers and missiles to Belarus. And they have many, many combat infantry battalions in Belarus where they could very quickly reach the capital.
When you look at a map, not a long way from the border to the capital.
No, and because of the way Ukraine's military is spread out in a very big country, the senior military official says that very, very few Ukrainian troops are currently defending the roads to Kyiv. They would be massively outnumbered. And without doubt, of course, the Russians already know that. We should stress here that when we talk about a big invasion that would target the capital, we talk of what Russia is able to do, not what they will definitely do. There are many other and smaller ways they could attack. They could use cyber attacks and various things, and they've denied plans to attack at all.
Of course, talks continue. Let's remind ourselves what's at stake for the United States in Ukraine.
Well, for the Biden administration, as well as the military, this is a test of the rules-based international order that has endured since 1945. The official says this would be a huge act of international aggression, and it would strike at the idea of national sovereignty and endanger these rules that have been used to avoid a world war for generations, Scott.
There are analysts who doubt Russia would ever invade Ukraine because they say essentially President Putin is getting everything he wants without an actual invasion.
Without a doubt. We heard an analyst in Moscow say days ago that he never believed Putin intended to invade, and he has forced the West to think about Russian concerns. He's getting a stream of foreign visitors, and he's going to be on the phone this weekend, apparently, with President Biden. But the concern by the senior U.S. military official is that Putin may be close to a historic mistake. His troops could invade Ukraine easily, which makes it tempting, although they could have a lot of trouble getting out. But national leaders sometimes disregard warnings. They do what they want. And Vladimir Putin has signaled intense interest in Ukraine for a very long time.
Steve Inskeep of NPR's Morning Edition, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to do it.
We just heard how U.S. officials assess what a Russian invasion could look like, but are Russian threats to invade part of a strategy? We're joined now by Harun Yilmaz. He's an academic editor with Routledge. His research focuses on Ukraine and Central Asia, and he joins us from London. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
You wrote an op-ed for Al Jazeera this week, essentially expressing skepticism that Russia is going to invade. Tell us why.
A closer examination of Russia's geopolitical behavior in the past two decades demonstrates that they actually has a clear understanding of the risks on the ground, mm-hmm. and a full invasion does not fit into Moscow's cost-benefit calculus, because they usually pursue a cost-efficient policy when it comes to the use of hard power in geopolitical goals.
You believe that we have seen this before in the past few years in other places?
That's true. For instance, we have seen it in 2008 in Georgia war, which Russia intervened on the side of the separatist forces in the breakaway regions of South mm-hmm. Ossetia and Abkhazia against the Georgian government. And back then, Russian forces did not really face a formidable adversary and were able to easily defeat the Georgian forces. Then Russian troops crossed into Georgia proper, but then halted after 20 kilometers. Once the limited goal of pushing back Georgian forces from South Ossetia was achieved, Moscow was open to European mediation. In fact, the Russian troops could have completely cut Georgia into two, gained control of the precious oil and gas pipelines from Azerbaijan to Mediterranean coast, and paralyzed the Georgian economy and political system. Yet the regional and global costs would be too high for Russia, so they stop at a limited military operation. Mm. We see again this cost calculus and a cost-efficient policy in Syria, also in African affairs. So we constantly seek this cost-efficient policy, cost-efficient use of hard power in geopolitics. And we see it in Ukraine as well so far.
Well, tell us how. What are Russian aims as regards Ukraine in your judgment?
The real target is not Ukraine, but Moscow wants to force Western countries to finally sit down for negotiations on issues of European security. Mm-hmm. Because since 1991, this is the first time the West has engaged seriously with Russia to discuss European security, thanks in a way to the strategy that they are pursuing. And Moscow wants arrangements to be made on several issues, but these are European security matters, including halting the development of intermediate-range ballistic missiles in Europe and limiting military exercises in mm-hmm. close proximity to Russian borders. Because if you go back a little bit, in October 2018, the Trump administration decided to withdraw from the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which was signed by Reagan and Gorbachev. Mm-hmm. And that treaty prohibited both parties from possessing, producing, or, you know, flight testing intermediate range nuclear forces. Now we don't have that agreement. So in other words, Moscow, they understand that Ukraine will not enter NATO. And that's not the issue. In fact, the issue is if NATO enters Ukraine in the form of American missiles or missile defense elements, mm-hmm. that's without any international regulations that limits missile deployments in Europe.
Let me ask you this finally. At some point, does Vladimir Putin have to use military force if his threats to use military force are going to be taken seriously? I mean, if every time there's a troop deployment, people sense it's a bluff, won't they begin to dismiss it?
I think there are more options. I think Moscow sees this as a long process, and we might be moving from stage one to stage two, and there might be a stage three, but they're not necessarily full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Of course, the recent claims are obviously important, and military analysts work on certain scenarios based on the intelligence they receive, which is natural, which is normal. However, I would say the ongoing process still shows that Moscow pursues a cost-efficient policy when it comes to hard power use in geopolitics. And full-scale invasion of Ukraine does not fit into Moscow's cost-benefit calculus. I mean, it's irrational. And it's just we might be moving from stage one to stage two. So it's not a matter of days or weeks. We might see further stages of a long process and negotiations and some military maneuvers.
Harun Yildmaz, academic editor with Rutledge, whose research focuses on Ukraine and Central Asia. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you.